It is now, what is it, 12:10 on WGN. 12:10 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're here until 1 o'clock. And then Anna DeVlantis continues to stir the pot after her interesting show yesterday, which lent itself to our show today. So the tech comeback rally gains steam. I'm reading a headline here. As the NASDAQ jumps 3.5%, Tesla up 14%. What was the last number? The Dow up 302%. NASDAQ was up 4+, up 507 right now. John Najarian from MarketRebellion.com. Hey, John, what's going on and what's going on here?
Well, we're dealing with a really oversold condition in many of those tech stocks that, of course, the biggest ones were the ones that were hurt the most, quite frankly, John, in the sell-off. I mean, we've carried ourselves all the way down over 10% for the QQQ, which is the index for the NASDAQ. And obviously, some of the stocks within that QQQ had done much worse than a 10% drawback. They were in the 20 and in some cases double that drawback. So I think it was just a really oversold condition. And the all we needed was a little break from just the daily jump that we saw in February of the yield on the 10-year bond. Bonds sell off. That means, of course, that the yield goes up. And that had been going on throughout the entire month of February. And now, seemingly, 160 seems to be the top end rather than just the next jumping off point.
1.6%. Steve Alexander said yesterday they were buying the dip because NASDAQ was off yesterday. And now today it's up considerably. I don't know that this is a record day. It's not, but it's as a percent, this is up there. As a total, this is up there. So explain to me the difference between yesterday and today again.
Well, that's a good point. The biggest thing I think is that people believe that those rates, after they made that big pullback, the rates reversed dramatically on Friday. Some people attributed that, John, to this so-called plunge protection team, this PPT, which allegedly exists within the Fed, that the Fed goes out and takes these takes it upon itself to buy stocks and or to buy bonds. And we know they're buying bonds because they've told us they're going to. But on a day when they see a reversal of the sort we saw Friday in that 10-year going from 160 back down to 153,
yeah,
on the interest rate, that is. A lot of people attributed that to the Fed not buying the short-dated paper that they usually do, but instead buying the 10-year, so-called twist.
Talk to me about some individual equities. I see I'm looking at just some names that we all recognize here. Tesla, we talk about. Dick's Sporting Goods is making some news today. Stitch, et cetera. What jumps out at you?
Well, Stitch Fix, that was a horrible report this morning out of them, or last night. It was just they missed on virtually every metric and then gave you weak guidance on top of it. So, you know, pretty much put everything in the negative category there. As far as the good category, I would say you do have some companies that really are doing rather well, including, believe it or not, MoneyGram, which was initially down some, I think, 20-plus percent on the news that they were breaking off a relationship with XRP, which is also known as Ripple. And MoneyGram does just what you think, folks. They wire money back and forth, and for them to be able to wire a cryptocurrency they thought was a big announcement a few years ago, it has never become a big deal for them, and now they've broken off the relationship. The stock reversed from being down in the after hours to now being higher throughout today's trading session.
Any other thoughts about the NASDAQ? The NASDAQ was generally held up by just a handful of companies, right?
True.
Through the pandemic, the reason that the Dow or the NASDAQ were doing well were really in each index, largely because of just a handful of companies. Isn't that true?
It's true. There were a number of those companies, the FANGs and FANG Man, if you want to throw Microsoft in there. There were a number of stocks that were darlings of the stay-at-home crowd. and they operated exceptionally well. Those companies that were taking the biggest hits, basically, from September of last year when the fangs topped out and all the way through February, there hadn't been more than a few days' worth of good rallies in those names. And now they're switching back, if you will, almost like handing off the baton back to the fangs. Certainly today's jump in the NASDAQ implies that that handoff has happened and that there are people pouring money into, as you say, Tesla, 14%, and a number of the stay-at-home stocks really getting major focus yet again.
But those broader indices aren't suffering for it either. The S&P is up, the Dow is up, and the Dow is around 31,000. So I'm wondering if maybe this signals, you know, sort of a broader support for all of the market, for all of these companies.
You're spot on, John. The fact that the stimulus is out there and it's going to be nearly $2 trillion voted on tomorrow, I guess, and then the fact that there's a trillion that's unspent from the prior stimulus means that we're going to see an awful lot of positives pouring from Joe's and Jane's wallets back into the market. That's what the market's anticipating. Some of that will go into the market. Some of it will go into the stocks that make up the market in one way or another, either through travel, through shopping. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing right now is the optimism over how quickly that works its way into the system.
John Najarian is the founder of MarketRebellion.com, the financial news education subscription site. Nice to talk to you today, John. Thanks for the heads up on all of that.
Thank you, sir. You have a great one.
It's 12:21 on WGN Radio. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Another conversation with Matt DiLoretto. He's the Vice President, State Government Affairs at the HDA, the Healthcare Distribution Alliance, which, as I recall, Matt, you are the people that move stuff around. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. We are the national association that represents primary pharmaceutical wholesale distributors. Great to be back with you.
Yeah, well, the last time we spoke, it was just when the word had broken that a vaccine was going to be produced by Moderna and then by Pfizer. It was way before Johnson, and the issues were about refrigeration and freezing, and even if they can produce it, how are we going to get it around? What's changed since we last spoke, Matt? How are you all doing? How's the network working?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, it's been a whirlwind of activity. HDA members have been involved with all aspects of COVID response. McKesson, our largest member, was identified as a centralized distributor for vaccine. Also, some of our other members, like AmerisourceBergen, were identified as distributing all COVID therapeutics. Nationwide. But since the last time we spoke, the one thing that has remained consistent is that the distribution of vaccine, which is different than the supply and also the administration, but the distribution of vaccine has continued to be able to absorb and appropriately distribute the amount of vaccine made available by the manufacturing community. So as of yesterday, our members have been involved with distributing about 116 million units of the COVID vaccine. And as of yesterday, about 92 million have been administered. So those numbers are pretty consistent, that the one thing that is continuously reported is that the amount of vaccine distributed is more than that which is getting in arms, which is a good sign for the wholesalers.
Good sign for the wholesalers. What does that mean? Why is that a good sign?
Well, I mean that we are able to respond to the volume of vaccine that is out there being produced. And all indications are that, you know, the foreseeable future, as more vaccines come online, there is plenty of infrastructure in the wholesale distribution industry to be able to absorb the increased supply and continuously, immediately turning around those vaccines and getting them where do they need to go.
Yeah, I saw that number the other day, that 92 million doses of the vaccine have been administered to, I think it was just over 30 million people. That is, over 30 million people have gotten both doses. And then I guess 60 million people have gotten, the other 60 million have gotten at least one dose of the two vaccines. And you're talking about both, right? Moderna and Pfizer?
Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, I'm speaking of. Pfizer is being distributed from Pfizer itself. They are handling the distribution of that due to the ultra-cold nature of that product. But those numbers that I am indicating are from CDC, so you are correct that they cover all vaccine doses.
Yeah, and the idea is that, just walk me through the mechanics of this one more time. These drugs are produced, or vaccines, although you mentioned therapeutics as well, they're being produced in the United States, isn't that right?
I don't know where all the different manufacturing sites are located, but some are in the United States. I know that for sure.
This network of trucks and trucking companies then pick the things up, deliver them to centralized locations. From there, they're distributed to pharmacies, hospitals, county offices, that sort of thing.
That's correct. The federal government and the state governments are responsible and entirely in control of how much each state gets, and then where those products are going within the state. This is not being done from what we call a normal healthcare supply chain, or, to put simply, a commercialized system. The federal government is indicating how much product goes to each state, the allocation of that product.
Mm-hmm.
So when a manufacturer manufactures the vaccine, a wholesaler, most notably McKesson, takes that product and, at the direction of the government, ships that product, working with other experts in logistics, such as UPS and FedEx, and gets that product to where it needs to go.
So in terms of logistics, I mean, because I have family and friends all around the country, I guess a lot of us do. I'm just thinking specifically about my brother's family in Arizona, and they seem to have more of the vaccine there. It's not because the trucks aren't getting to Chicago. It's not because whatever we're allocated hasn't been delivered. It's being delivered. We're just not being allocated as much as some of us would like. Is that a true statement?
I'll only speak in generalities, but that is likely the case. I mean, I don't have knowledge at the granular level as to each and every, obviously, administration site and jurisdiction. But what we are seeing, you know, across the board is that once the direction is provided as to where a product should go, and that product is made available to the distributor arm of this supply chain, it's usually about a 24-hour turnaround to when that's going out the door and getting to where it needs to go. So it is not being, put simply, held up by the wholesale distribution arm of this supply chain.
Yeah, I think a lot of us. Pardon me, Matt. I think a lot of us want to be mad at somebody, and evidently it's not you. That is, it's not a logistics issue, and it sounds to me like it is somewhat of an administrative one. Somebody is making a decision at the federal level that this is how much Illinois is going to get. Lori Lightfoot, for instance, here in Chicago, has determined that the United Center, which is having its soft opening today and a larger opening tomorrow, is going to limit the people that can get the vaccine there to Chicagoans because too many people are signing up from outside the city. All of that to say this, why aren't we getting sent more vaccine? Why aren't we, in fact, on the receiving end of more of it, as they are in Arizona, where they've lowered the recipient threshold, the age, to 50, and where some people 18 years old are able to get it just because they got more than they quote-unquote need. So we're trying to figure out why that is. And it's not on the highways that is the problem, right?
Yeah, our position is, it is, to put, as you just said, it is not on the highways. We are acting on behalf of those that are making those decisions as to how much goes where, when. And we have the infrastructure already in place to absorb more supply and get it to where it needs to go. And up until this point, we have successfully absorbed the amount of product that has been provided to us. Mm-hmm. So that all is to say is if more vaccine comes online, put simply, and is made available to us to distribute to McKesson and HTA's members, that we will be able to successfully get that product where it needs to go.
This is Chicago. I got a case of Old Style. Maybe one of your trucks make a left turn comes down my way. I wonder how tempting it is, or how, you know, frankly, if I was driving one of those trucks with that invaluable commodity in the back, I don't want to say it would be tempting to see what I can get for it, but rather I would just be nervous having something that valuable on the back. You know, if something happens and you got sneakers back there, the sneakers, you know, suffer. But if you have the vaccine back there, that's an irreplaceable commodity. We got to go make more. And in the meantime, people suffer, you know.
It's a very valuable commodity. And I will say that since the early days of this this rollout, this vaccine rollout, that security has been extremely HTA members, along with the manufacturers and the federal government, have taken great precautions to ensure that the security around these shipments is, you know, certainly adequate, from what I understand. I am not in that department, but I do hear, you know, the news on those folks, and they take that very seriously.
Yeah. Well, the fact that we haven't heard anything like that, or for that matter, spill, if you will, I think tells you everything you need to know about that. Matt DiLoretto is the Vice President, State Government Affairs at the HDA. That's the Healthcare Distribution Alliance. You never knew there was such a thing. Good to know there is. Matt, thanks for your time today. It's just kind of nice to catch up with you. Let's visit again in a few months.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me back, and y'all have a good day.
That's Matt DiLoretto. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom McLeod joins us now, the founder of Zenlist. Visit zenlist.com if you're in the real estate market, particularly, I guess, Tom, if you are trying to buy, right?
Yeah, that's right, John. Thanks for having us. Zenlist is a new marketplace for home buyers in Chicagoland. And they can get invited onto Zenlist by their agent to browse all of the active listings on the market, and then thousands of pre-market listings as well.
That's what you guys offer. It's not just, it sounds like an aggregator app, but also it has things that you might not find on Redfin or Zillow. Can anybody, you said invited by their real estate agent, I have to be invited to get the app?
Yeah, that's right. Today, Zenlist is an invite-only experience. We work with about 50 brokerages across Chicagoland and about 3,000 licensed agents that can grant access to their consumers onto Zenlist. And to your point, they can just search more listings than what they can search on, you know, public domain websites like the ones you mentioned.
So how does that work? I mean, it would seem to me like somebody selling their house would list it with an agency. They would be on Redfin. How is it that there are even homes that aren't on those sites already?
Well, absolutely. That's a great point. The vast majority of the pre-market listings that we have will go to the active marketplace and be on those sites. But, you know, sellers might be taking photography or preparing their home, so they're not quite ready to put it in the public domain. But this is one tremendous value proposition that real estate agents have, is they can give you a sneak peek mm-hmm. into properties that are coming on the market.
And will these, in fact, come on the market? That is, if they've not been technically listed, will they be for sale?
Oh, yeah. Every one of the pre-market listings on Zenlist is represented by an agent, and the vast, vast majority of them will go to the active market.
A lot of
the benefit in it. Oh, go ahead.
No, Tom, finish that thought. Go ahead.
Oh, the benefit is, you know, the Chicagoland market is super hot, and getting to compare what's on the market with listings that are coming to the market is a tremendous value for home buyers.
Will I see listings from those other well-known sites, Realtor.com, Redfin, Zillow, et cetera? Will all of those also be on this site?
Absolutely. Those sites reflect all of the active inventory of listings from the MLS, which Zenlist does as well. But then for the 50-plus brokerages that are working on Zenlist, They share their pre-market inventory on Zenlist as well to all of the Zenlist agents, the agents working on Zenlist, and all of the consumers that they have invited onto the platform.
So in order to see this, I have to have an agent then, which some people don't want to do. They just want to click around on their own. If, to get access to this, do I have to reach out to a real estate agent in Chicago?
That's right. That's how it works today. We're still very new, John. So Chicago is our first market, and you do need to work with an agent to gain access today.
And I don't and who knows, that may be the way to go, right? I mean, as a business model, then this is very attractive to a select group of agents who are able to offer this extra value to their customers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And those other sites that you mentioned are a different experience. We believe real estate for a consumer is both an online experience and an offline experience. Those sites that you mentioned, when you need to go offline and see a property, you'll often get connected to an agent to do that. On Zenlist, you're working directly with your agent and collaborating with your agent on the platform online. And then when you need to go offline to go look at properties, you're working with that same agent.
So if I do see a house on Zenlist, and by the way, on the phone line is Tom McLeod? McLeod, pardon me.
Tom McLeod.
McLeod,
like the sky.
Imagine that. Tom McLeod is the founder of Zenlist. Zenlist.com is the website. So if I do find a house on your site, Tom, that I like, can I make an offer then? And I guess, or is it going to be available to the public at large, right? I may be first in line, but everybody else is going to get a shot at this property as well.
That's right. It's more you can work directly with your real estate agent to determine if you can make an offer or not. But the value add that we provide is that you get to see those listings before they hit the market. So consumers love seeing what's around the corner and comparing that with, you know, what's available today.
This is intriguing. And they advertise 20 to 30% more listings than those other sites. So if there's that preliminary market out there, and you are a prospective buyer, that's very enticing. Zenlist.com is the website.
Okay. Yeah, and to your point, John, in certain areas of Chicagoland, our pre-market inventory might be as much as 20 to 30%. In total, in Chicagoland, we've got about 10% more listings than the other sites that you mentioned.
Okay, Zenlist.com. Tom, good luck to you. What a great idea. And let's visit again down the road.
Thank you, John.
Zenlist.com. 12:42 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. There's some blowback after the revelation that Target is looking for space on the Magnificent Mile. The retailer's reportedly looking at the space that Macy's is vacating in Watertower Place. It's unclear how close Target may be to signing any deal. Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas, who lives nearby, has said a Target store would damage the reputation of Michigan Avenue and nearby Oak Street as destinations for high-end retailers. Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins, whose ward includes Watertower Place, confirmed Target is one of several companies in talks with Brookfield Properties for the space. Chicago-based mortgage lender Guaranteed Rate has formed a new technology spinoff aimed at simplifying the loan process. The spinoff is called Gateless and uses artificial intelligence and machine learning to reduce manual tasks and human errors as it automates the document review and filing process. Chicago Inno reports Gateless has already raised an undisclosed amount in a Series A funding round. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Amy, we've been talking about Target today and whether or not they ought to be in Watertower Place, but you've got a different story about Target, right?
Yeah, that's right. The Watertower story is a big one, and a lot of people are talking about that today. But while that's going on, Target has also announced plans to come out with a new line of food and beverages. This is going to hit stores in early April-ish. They didn't have an exact date, but early April. And it's called Favorite Day, and it's going to focus on indulgences and snacks and kind of high-end ice cream and things like that. And they're, you know, the way they're describing it is that they're looking for a way to keep people coming back into the store. We talked about how last week about how Q4 was for Target, how their numbers were. A lot of people leaned on kind of that one-stop shopping kind of model for big box stores. But this particular new line of food that they're going to come out with is really speaking to indulgences. And they talked a little bit about how people are looking for a sense of a reward and a little bit of indulgence, something to kind of break up the day and de-stress a little bit. So these are going to be things like, again, premium ice cream and baked goods and stuff like that. So we're going to, it's like this kind of pastel branding on the outside. So we will see those in stores coming up pretty soon, in about a month from now.
You make me think, we don't have that at Target already. I guess we don't. The stuff at Target is good, but basic. There's no premium brand name there, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly the same thought I had. I thought, well, isn't that stuff already at Target? But when you think about the Target brands, you know, they have some of their regular brands, the go-to, and we recognize that red and white label on them. But this is something they're kind of trying to go more in the indulgence route, more that higher end piece to compete with some of the higher end brands that they sell in the store.
Talk to me also. Okay, so that's one story. Then you have a Chipotle story. What's going on there?
Yeah, so Chipotle is kind of back to its old tricks. They've done something like this before, and they're going to add a quesadilla to the menu starting Thursday, which is a big deal to a lot of people. That's something that Chipotle fans have asked for a long time. And if social media is any indication, people are pretty jazzed about this. But the catch is that you can only order it online. You can't just walk into the restaurant and order it. You have to do it online. Part of that is because it's going to take a lot longer to make. If you think about how long you have to kind of cook a quesadilla to melt the cheese and things like that, that's going to hold up that line. So part of it is to kind of stem the flow of how many people are ordering this quesadilla. But they've done something like this before. When they had their carne asada, they had kind of this launch of online only. They've done a lot of things like this to speak to online users in a different way than in-store orders. And so again, that starts on Thursday. We will see quesadillas on the menu.
What's news in the airline industry? You follow jet makers and air carriers. What's going on?
Yeah, so some optimistic news from Boeing today, and that is that they their net orders have been positive as of February for the first time in 14 months. If you think about all the tumultuous stuff that Boeing has been through, the 737 MAX crisis, not to mention the pandemic and the decline in air travel, all of that stuff, they had so many cancellations because carriers were like, I'm not having passengers right now. I'm sure not going to take your orders. And then we saw that the 737 MAX was also grounded leading up to that time. So for them to report a positive net order is a really pretty big deal for Boeing. And it looks kind of optimistic for the air travel industry, right? It looks like the way they're maneuvering their back orders, the way they're pulling things off a back order, kind of starts to look like some air carriers are starting to take their orders, which some are. Southwest and United, they took some orders. The U.S. Air Force took some order for some tanker planes. And so we're seeing this positive number for the first time in such a long time, which is obviously good news for Boeing, but it really points to perhaps some optimism from carriers, which I think is going to be an important thing to watch. So many carriers are really banking on any minute now, people are going to start snapping up summertime travel deals, and they're really kind of hoping for a boost in that revenue. They've all kind of said it will be a while till pre-pandemic recovery happens, but it'll happen. But they all are kind of depending on the summer revenue to be a thing. So I think they're all really kind of, you know, champing at the bit to see those orders start to come in. And this is a positive sign in that direction.
Yeah, and it's an interesting metric to me. I hadn't thought about this, but this is, they're positive for the first time on orders.
That's right.
Orders for planes. So much has been coming off the books. Now they have more going on the books than coming off.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So when you're looking at, you kind of factor in orders and deliveries when you're looking at it, because the order is several months out, sometimes even a year out. So they did deliver some planes this last month, and they took in orders. They still had some cancellations. They had around 50 orders canceled, but the net positive came out to about 31 jets, which is, again, positive for the first time since November of 2019, which is, I'm sure, very welcome news for Boeing.
Cookies are in the news, and we don't mean the snack kind. What's going on here?
Yeah, that's right. So Google Chrome, the browser, has said they're following along with a lot of discussions right now about privacy and how we're tracked online. And they said they're no longer going to track us with third-party cookies on the Chrome browser. They're following Safari and Firefox. They're now blocking third-party cookies by default. But now Chrome, Google has said that Chrome, their browser, they're planning to do the same. They went a little further there because they kind of spoke to the advertising piece of it. You know, we all know how this kind of plays out. You Google a pair of shoes or something for your house or something like that, and then you go to Facebook and there's an ad for it. And then you go to another website and there's an ad for it. And that's how these cookies kind of follow you around, delivering data about you for to other places that you visit. And so by outlawing that, their point is kind of that, you know, we can get data just as well and do some effective ad targeting by looking at group behavior and seeing what groups of people are drawn to, looking more about volume of activity around products and things like that than about individual users. So I think it's a really interesting time. It's a story that kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but it's actually quite a big deal because the cookie has been just the default thing for such a long time and really been a point of focus for privacy advocates for a very long time. So Google is joining the other browser giants and doing away with the cookie. So we will see how that gets replaced in terms of advertising data and consumer behavior and how that's tracked.
And the tech experts at places like CNET will tell us that a lot of that tracking that you think you're, you know, being the object of is in fact not them following your clicks per se, but just they know what people do. And the fact that all of a sudden ads are popping up in your feed relative to where you recently searched or what you said near your smart speaker is not because they're listening, but just because they know.
Which
is tantalizing.
Yeah, there's a lot of predictive behavior around it and a lot of things like that I think are really interesting and a lot more people are talking about.
Did you know Geico could save you hundreds
on
car insurance?
Hold on one second. I don't know where that's coming from, but that's the end of this segment anyway. Let's have more of this conversation down the road, but it's good to talk to you today, Amy.
Nice talking to you.